The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
For decades, the power of women's hormone shifts has been unrecognized and underestimated. Most women have a lack of education when it comes to the endocrine system and how and why our hormones affect our minds, moods, and behaviors. Welcome to Holy Hormones, Honey, with your host, Leslie Carol Botha, sponsored by True Hope, the leaders in brain health. When women thrive, everyone thrives. That is True Hope. Now, here is your host, Leslie Botha.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. I'm Leslie Carol Botha, your host. Today's episode is titled Pharmageddon, a tragic story of epic proportions. My esteemed guest is Dr. David Healy, an internationally respected psychiatrist, psychopharmacologist, scientist, and author. A professor of psychiatry in Wales, David studied medicine in Dublin and at Cambridge University. He is a former secretary of the British Association for Psychopharmacology and has authored more than 150 peer-reviewed articles, 200 other pieces, 20 books, including The Antidepressant Era and The Creation of Psychopharmacology, Psychopharmacologist, Volumes 1 through 3, Let Them Eat Prozac, Mania and Shock Therapy, the History of Electroconvulsive Treatment in Mental Illness. David's main areas of research are clinical trials in psychopharmacology, the history of psychopharmacology, and the impact of both trials and psychotropic drugs on our culture. He has been involved as an expert witness in homicide and suicide trials, including psychotropic drugs, and in bringing problems with these drugs to the attention of the American and British regulators, as well as raising awareness of how pharmaceutical companies sell drugs by marketing diseases and co-opting academic opinion leaders ghostwriting their articles. David's latest book, Pharmageddon, documents the riveting and terrifying story of how pharmaceutical companies have hijacked healthcare in America and the life-threatening results. David is a founder and chief executive officer of Database Medicine Limited, which operates through its website, risk.org. That's R-X-I-S-K. .org. And that site is dedicated to making medicine safer through online direct patient reporting of drug effects. So now let's just go back in history for a moment. Not too many medical consumers remember or even mention one of the most dangerous drugs to ever hit the market, and that's thalidomide. I was delighted to see that Dr. Healy posted this historical event on his blog, davidhealy.org, in reference to his latest book, Pharmageddon. David, let's start there. What is thalidomide? I mean, this is what happens when people lose a sense of history and do not read and do not research. We take these drugs and then only to find out they're dangerous.
Yes, absolutely. The extraordinary story here, Leslie, is this. This was a sleeping pill that was being used by loads of people, particularly women, and often when they became pregnant in the late 1950s. And within a few years of its being used, it became clear over in Europe that lots of babies were being born without arms and legs and with all sorts of heart defects and various other problems. The company that produced the drug totally denied that there could be any link between their drug and these problems. Now, the curious thing was this gave rise then to, in 1962, it gave rise to the current Food and Drugs Act that you have in the United States, but it's a Food and Drugs Act that really essentially is the same as the one we have throughout Europe and in most of the world these days. We've done very much the same kind of thing as the lead given by the United States in 1962. And one of the things they did was to ask companies to prove their drugs worked using controlled trials to show that the drug worked. Now, the problem with this is this, that as of 1962, when that was made law, when it became the law that companies had to put their drugs through a controlled trial, compare it to placebo, to show that it was better than placebo, before they could bring the drug on the market, there was only one drug at that point in time that had been through a placebo-controlled trial and had been shown to work and had been shown to be completely safe, and that drug was thalidomide.
Mm.
So the system we put in place to try and ensure we've got drugs that work and to ensure that we've got drugs that are safe, based on this awful tragedy, is a system that this drug sailed through perfectly without any problems at all. And the problem now, I think, is if thalidomide were to come on the market now, the company would be able to use the fact that there was this controlled trial in which there were no problems and the drug was shown to work beautifully to stop the recognition that there is a problem. Before 62, we picked up this birth defect problem pretty quickly, within a year or two of it actually beginning to happen. If it were to happen now today, with any of the serious problems drugs cause now today, when they come onto the market through controlled trials and when they're made prescription only, it's usually on average 10 to 15 years before people accept that the drug is causing the problem that retrospectively we can see it was very obviously causing.
You know, you make an excellent point there. And as we were speaking, I'm thinking of so many other drugs/vaccines that are the same way. We don't relate any aftermath, any adverse reaction back to the very drug that we're taking, even though there's side effects, litanies of side effects on all the television commercials. Now, this thalidomide, I mean, there are thousands and tens of thousands of cases reported of infants with lost limbs, maimed limbs, and I invite all of you to go do a Google image search for thalidomide to refresh your memory about this very dangerous drug. 50% of these infants died.
Yes, it's a huge number. But the interesting thing about it is we're in a world now where the antidepressant group of drugs, for instance, have become the most commonly used drugs during pregnancy. And this is a group of drugs that causes birth defects. Now, it looked like after thalidomide, the one thing that no pregnant woman would ever do, in a hurry at least, was to take a pill while she was pregnant. We have a world now where the culture has changed so much that doctors are pretty actively encouraging, if not actually forcing, women to take an antidepressant when they're pregnant on the basis that these drugs pose no risk at all when they do. And it's saying to women, actually, if you leave your nerves, your anxiety untreated, that's what will cause birth defects. And in fact, there's almost no evidence that this is actually the case.
You know, these are serious issues, especially in a culture now, a global culture that is not getting vitamins, minerals, micronutrients that we need to strengthen our bodies. Robert Whittaker, who wrote Anatomy of an Epidemic, was a guest of mine a while ago. I keep going back to a point he made, that the first people on psychotropic drugs, the first medical consumers on psychotropic drugs, I think in the 50s or 60s, correct me if I'm wrong, David, those drugs affected their neural pathways. Those neural pathways do not reconnect themselves. So from every generation thereforth, those distorted, disrupted neural pathways, communication systems in the brain keep deteriorating. And we have this epidemic of mental illness, which then gives more rise to using more drugs. How many people these days are on psychotropic medicines, David? Do you know?
Well, it's a very large proportion of the population. The problem with all these things is the drugs can be, I mean, in essence, the drugs are, as you outline, and how medicine used to view these drugs back in the 50s was all drugs are poisons. And the trick is, I mean, what that contains is the idea that if you're going to use a poison, you need to use it with great care. You only use it in the case of people who have a severe condition where the risks that the condition poses are even greater than the risks that the poison poses. So it's worthwhile, or it may be worthwhile, to take the risks of taking a poison. Okay? That was the attitude doctors had. Let's turn around. And drugs these days are regarded much more like fertilizers, that we want to go out and sprinkle them as widely as possible and get as many people taking them as we can, even from a very young age. This is an extraordinary culture change.
I'm thinking of the HPV vaccine, Gardasil and Cervarix. I'm thinking of the tens, if not hundreds of thousands of adolescent girls, mostly girls since that was where it was first marketed, who have been adversely affected by this drug. Going back to what you said, the pharmaceutical companies are denying it, Merck and GlaxoSmithKline. I'm thinking of the featured post on my blog this morning about NuvaRing, a synthetic hormone contraceptive now linked to deaths and other adverse reactions. I'm going to tie that all into what you just said, that drugs are poison. How could they not? Define a poison, David.
Well, I think it's really self-defined in the sense of it's a thing that is potentially harmful to the human body. And now it may be worthwhile to take the risks of taking the poison if you and your doctor have really weighed up what the issues are, what could go wrong, and have recognized that these things could go wrong, but still have made a judgment call that given the illness that you've got, it's worthwhile to take these risks. A little bit, so the way to bring this over perhaps is to think of it in terms of the chemotherapies we give for cancer. Cancer is an extraordinarily serious illness. It's likely to kill the person that has the illness. Chemotherapies can be helpful, and it may be worthwhile, not always, but it may be worthwhile to take the risks that the chemotherapeutic agents pose. I think most people understand that trade-off when it comes at cancer. But what they need to realize is that, in a sense, almost all the drugs we use can be nearly as poisonous as the cancer chemotherapeutic drugs can be. And we should have the same attitude toward them, which is we really reserve them for conditions that are very, very serious. And we recognize that if you don't need to be on them, you really shouldn't be on them. And we shouldn't be awfully surprised if we do go on them when we don't need to and find that there are problems up the road.
David, when we had talked earlier in the week about the show and what we would talk about, you also brought up the combined risk with these drugs and taking more than one drug. Let's do that. We just have a couple of minutes left, and then we're going to go into break.
Okay. Right. Well, one of the extraordinary things is this. Back in the 50s or 1960s or so, when people went on pills, when a doctor gave you a pill like an antibiotic for a chest infection, you were on this pill for a week or so, not more. You were on it till the condition cleared up. And you were usually only on one pill at a time. We're in a world now where, particularly if you're over the age of about 40 or 50, there's a good chance that the pharmaceutical companies have been able to engineer the kind of situation where both you and your doctor are treating you not for a disease, but for risk factors. Risk factors like raised blood pressure or raised cholesterol levels or perhaps bone thinning or whatever. And the chances are, if you go on pills for any of these these risk factors that aren't illnesses. This is the point that you need to bear in mind. When you go on treatment for a risk factor, you're usually on it for the rest of your life. The condition doesn't clear up. And the thing is, we can often have a few risk factors where before we would only have one illness at a time. Now we can often be seen to have many risk factors. And the result of this is that lots of us are on loads of pills, or at least five or more pills. And the older we get, the greater the number of pills we're on. So many people over the age of 60 or perhaps possibly 70 are on up to 10 pills per day now.
And let's leave it at that, David. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you taking medications for depression, anxiety, or hyperactivity? Are you one of the millions of people who have experienced negative side effects from your medication? Do you notice that you just don't feel like yourself? For decades, the nutrient therapy leaders at True Hope have helped tens of thousands of children and adults replace their medications with Empower Plus, an all-natural multivitamin and mineral complex clinically proven to fix the issues rather than cover them up. If you or someone you know is ready for a natural solution that works, go to www.truehope.com to learn more. 20 medical journal publications show that the Empower Plus formulation can replace harsh medications. Thousands of people taking all-natural Empower Plus are medication-free without a return of symptoms. Go to www.truehope.com or call 888-878-3467 to try a bottle of Empower Plus today. Type in offer code RADIO for 25% off your first order. Again, that's www.truehope.com or 888-878-3467.
Understanding your mind, mood, and hormone cycle is dedicated to all the women who have ever experienced a hormone fluctuation, to the generations of women who have died because they had forgotten the source of their being. The richly illustrated groundbreaking book, co-authored by Leslie Carroll Botha and H. Sandra Chevalier Batik, is the product of a 9-year project which represents the author's shared passion and unified purpose to provide women with the education they need to reclaim their bodies and their souls. Find the book today. Click the link on the radio show page.
Step into a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Holy Hormones, Honey, with Leslie Carroll Botha. To call into our program today, please dial 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to leslie@holyhormones.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back, everyone. We're talking with Dr. David Healy, author, scientist, psychopharmacologist, about pharmaceuticals, the marketing of disease. And we as unsuspecting medical consumers are taking these pills, these medications, these vaccines without realizing, as David said, that these are poisons to our body. But hello, really, let's think about that. These are synthetics. These are chemicals, aluminum, mercury, dangerous heavy metals that we are injecting into our bloodstreams, that we are injecting, ingesting in again into our bloodstreams. How could they not be poisonous to the human body? David, how did you fall into this field, and what was your wake-up call?
I'm unsure, Holly, that I ever had a wake-up call in the sense that I think I've held much the same views the whole way through. And in a sense, I think I'm just holding the views that doctors back in the 1950s and 1960s had. A good doctor back then, the things that used to be said about being a good doctor back then were things like that the art of medicine is in lies in knowing when to treat if there is a treatment that will work. But it's an even greater art to know when not to treat, or else things like that every drug is a poison and the art of medicine lies in finding the right dose. These are the kinds of attitudes that informed medicine back then, and I think it was perhaps because of the trainers I had or whatever, or perhaps because I'd seen the ill effects of drugs among people in my own family. That was the approach I think I've had from the very start. And what's been alarming for me is, there's no big change for me. It's been more a case of finding that the field seems to be going away from me in a different direction, that people seem to have forgotten that, part of the art of medicine should lie in not using treatments rather than in using as many treatments as you can.
I know. I think that is a brilliant statement. You have a website. It's rxisk.org. It is the first website, just becoming familiar with you and your work, that I have found that is actually encouraging people to document, to tell their stories about adverse drug reactions. Do you want to speak about that?
Absolutely. This is the thing that's the most important thing to me at the moment. And along with a few colleagues 3 or 4 years ago, we all felt pretty much the same way. But what was happening was that things that can go wrong on pills were being airbrushed out of the picture. And not only that, but when people had things go wrong on pills for them and tried to raise their concerns with the doctor who had put them on the pill, they often found themselves, not listened to. They found the doctor saying to them, no, the pill couldn't be causing these problems, and the evidence shows that there is no risk from these pills. So this led us to do two things. One is to make available on risk.org the database that FDA has of the adverse events that are reported to them. Now, there's a few different groups of people who make data like this available to the people who may be listening to the program now, but they'll often charge you for the data. What we do is, if you go into risk, you can access the 4.6 million reports that FDA has now on the drugs that are on the market at the moment, and you can get them for free. So you can go in and have a look at the pill you're on and what's been reported to FDA about the adverse events that it has actually caused. The other thing that we're keen to do is this, is to get people to report in more detail what happens to them when they go on a pill. Partly the reason for this is when a doctor reports an adverse event to the pharmaceutical company, then hand it on to FDA, often he'll just report, say, for instance, that this drug made the person dizzy. He'll just say, dizzy. In actual fact, however, when you report it, or I report it, when we've been put on the drug, we'll report a thing like, well, this drug made me feel dizzy for 10 to 15 seconds every 2 or 3 days. It sounds harmless, but we'll also go on to report the fact that, and the first time this happened, I fell down the stairs and broke a leg, and the next time it happened, I was driving my car, and I've actually had a car crash, and I've now lost my job because of it. And you can see that often, the one-word report from the doctor conveys nothing about the actual problem or the impact it's had on the person's life. And what we're trying to do is to get people to report in more detail than doctors usually do, because it will help convey just what the impact of the whole thing is and how serious the problems can be. And the third thing we're doing is this. One of the things that's been quite extraordinary for me to watch is, even when colleagues that I have here who work in healthcare and who know how the system works and things about, when they have an adverse event on a drug and take it even to a doctor that I would think is a very nice and good doctor, they often find they're made feel an inch tall, that it's very, very difficult to raise the issues, that the doctor blows them away. Now, if you go to your doctor and you raise an issue just verbally, and there's no record made, and you walk out the door then, and let's say you said that you've got this pain in your chest, and you walk out the door and you actually have a heart attack afterwards, well, you know, the doctor, if he hasn't listened to you, there's no problem for him. But if you go in with a report, clutching in your hand a report about the problem you've had, and that you've been on risk.org, and we've taken you through a bunch of questions to check and see could the drug be linked to the problem you have, and we've given you a score which points out that it's likely or unlikely that the drug is linked to the problem you have, and we've advised you to go and talk to your doctor. If he pays no heed to that, and you walk out the door, and you then have a heart attack, say, he's going to be in trouble, or he's going to recognize that he can't just blow you away in the way he could before. He really does need to pay more heed to you. So our hope is that, I mean, it's going to be a difficult thing for people to do, but what we want them to do is to file reports and generate reports which they print out and take to the doctor who's put them on a pill that's causing them problems. And it's going to be, as I say, quite scary, even so, to walk in the door and try to raise the issue. But we're hoping that if people can do this, that they'll be able to pick out for themselves and for all the rest of us the doctors that listen. And we'll be able to grade them as good doctors versus the ones that don't listen and don't change the pills or don't see what can be done to put things right, who end up being the bad doctors. And my hope is that between us, between people doing this, we can change medicine into a much more listening thing, into a thing that was a little bit more like what it used to be compared with what it's become.
And I like that. And the truth is, David, and especially for women, but I would imagine this goes for men, but I've heard this from so many women, as soon as we walk into the doctor's office, we're minimized, marginalized. It's all in your head.
Well,
that drug has nothing to do with it. It has no side effects. It doesn't, list this as a side effect. It's all in your head.
Leslie, you've touched on a key point here. Risk.org, I mean, I'm a man, but actually risk.org was created by a group of us who felt that the people who will change the world most, people who have always changed the world most, have been women and not men. When it comes to standing up for a child who's potentially been injured by a treatment, or a partner who's been injured, or a parent who's been injured by treatment, it's really women who make the difference, the ones who it brings out a motivation in them that really is the motivation that can help change things more than anything else. In the case of the antidepressants, for instance, these now come with black box warnings that they can cause people to commit suicide. That's there because of mothers and wives who took the case to FDA and forced FDA to listen. And that's been the same for almost all the major side effects of drugs that we have. So risk.org has really been created on the idea that if we can get women involved, if we can give them the right kind of information and the right kind of tools, that they are the people that are going to make a difference.
And I'm so glad you said that. And there are so many women on the internet seeking and searching for answers, listening to this radio show. Let's do a black box warning, a list of side effects for antidepressants: confusion, depersonalization, hostility, hallucinations, manic reactions, suicidal ideation, loss of consciousness, delusions, feeling drunk, alcohol abuse, and homicidal ideation. You know, David, the trend is that we are drugging more and more people. I find it very interesting, and we made this comment on last week's episode, and now you're saying the UK is watching the United States. All eyes are on the United States and what we are doing to medical consumers in this country.
Mm-hmm. Leslie, just let me pick out one thing from the list there and try and bring it out a bit more to let people know what we're doing. You mentioned SSRIs and antidepressants and alcohol abuse. Well, it was actually one of the women who got in touch with risk.org who alerted us to the fact that she believed that the antidepressant, the SSRI she'd been put on, had caused her to become alcoholic. She ended up trying to persuade her doctor to change the pills, and he did. He changed it to a different SSRI, and the problem went on. But he said, look, I've changed the pills, so there, you're wrong. It, you know, the pills aren't causing it. You're just a typical alcoholic. She was referred along to AA, and they regarded her as a typical alcoholic as well, but she didn't think so. And ultimately, when sort of using us and things like that, she ended up changing the medication she was on, and the alcoholism went away completely. But only after she lost her job, only after she had criminal charges and things like this. But ultimately, this was a woman who had no healthcare training, had dropped out of school early, but she had the motivation to go into the internet and research the effects of drugs and work out exactly how SSRIs cause people to become alcoholic and exactly what she needed to do in order to prove the point. What we've ended up doing with her has been to write a scientific article that has now been published, making just this point, pointing out how SSRIs can cause people, particularly women it seems, to become alcoholic, to develop an alcohol problem they didn't have before. Now, there's two things here. One is the idea that SSRIs can cause alcoholism, but the other is this that I learned from it, which is that a motivated woman, even with no training, no background in the area, can really uncover things that the best experts in the field can't find.
And certainly with access to the internet, it makes it all that much easier. And the other thing is, as I would like to suggest to our listeners, is that before you are prescribed a drug or when you are prescribed a drug, you research it first before you start taking that medication. And you keep a journal of side effects. But I like what you said at the beginning of the show, David, is that really, unless you're in dire straits, unless you're really ill, unless you've tried every other option, natural alternative option available to you, including micronutrients, then really these drugs should be a last resort to prevent serious death and illness instead of maintenance.
I think what people need to realize is that if you go on a pill and then stop it, that's not the same as never having been on the pill. Once you take the pill, you can't ever go back to being untreated. Just because you hold the pill doesn't mean that you go back to where you were before you began it. So people need to be aware of this and take the risks into account before they begin.
Wow. Now that was powerful. That was very powerful. I have been involved with the Gardasil HPV vaccine issue for maybe close to 7 years, ever since it came out on the market. And many of my listeners are aware of that, or those who follow my blog at holyhormones.com are aware of that. And one of the things that has amazed me is that the mothers of these injured girls have become the very researchers, David, that you were talking about with this woman who was probably on Prozac or a similar SSRI that led to her sugar imbalance, which led to her alcoholism. And it's so fascinating to see this group of housewives. Of course, they've been called anti-vaccine cults, against vaccines. However, the deal is they all believed in the vaccines, otherwise they wouldn't have gotten their daughters vaccinated. Now to have scientific research and documents and are doing the work to make other people aware of what is going on with their daughters and to alert other mothers. And this has become a powerful movement. And I applaud you for what you said about women make the difference. They are the decision makers for the men in their family and the children in their family regarding health care. We just have a couple of minutes left to break, but I also want to say that RISK.org, RXISK.org, is an important tool to share.
Absolutely.
To report adverse events, to tell your story, and as David says on his website, You are the person who knows your side effects the best. Don't let somebody tell you it's all in your head. Take two Valium and go home, honey. Syndrome is what I call it, David.
Yes, well, that happens all too often.
And it is time that we take our health care back into our hands, that we become advocates for our health. What David just said is so important. Once you take this medication, it changes your biochemistry. And you'd never be the same again. Is that right, David?
It is, yes.
Okay. We're going to be right back. This is Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. I'm Leslie Botha, your host. Join me right after this break.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Understanding your mind, mood, and hormone cycle is dedicated to all the women who have ever experienced a hormone fluctuation, to the generations of women who have died because they had forgotten the source of their being. The richly illustrated groundbreaking book, co-authored by Leslie Carroll Botha and H. Sandra Chevalier Batik, is the product of a 9-year project which represents the author's shared passion and unified purpose to provide women with the education they need to reclaim their bodies and their souls. Find the book today. Click the link on the radio show page.
Are you taking medications for depression, anxiety, or hyperactivity? Are you one of the millions of people who have experienced negative side effects from your medication? Do you notice that you just don't feel like yourself? For decades, the nutrient therapy leaders at True Hope have helped tens of thousands of children and adults replace their medications with Empower Plus, an all-natural multivitamin and mineral complex clinically proven to fix the issues rather than cover them up. If you or someone you know is ready for a natural solution that works, go to www.truehope.com to learn more. 20 medical journal publications show that the Empower Plus formulation can replace harsh medications. Thousands of people taking all-natural Empower Plus are medication-free without a return of symptoms. Go to www.truehope.com or call 888-878-3467 to try a bottle of Empower Plus today. Type in offer code RADIO for 25% off your first order. Again, that's www.truehope.com or 888-878-3467.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Holy Hormones, Honey, with Leslie Carroll Botha. To call into our program today, please dial 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to Leslie@holyhormones.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everyone. My esteemed guest is Dr. David Healy, an internationally respected psychiatrist, psychopharmacologist, scientist, and author. His latest book is Pharmageddon. His website, other than davidhealy.org, where you can find a lot of information, but also risk.org. That's RXISK.org. You know, we all need to be concerned about this increasingly troublesome national trend. The whole world is watching us, as we've said. Today, more than 6 million Americans abuse prescription drugs, and the sales of prescription painkillers have tripled since 1996. According to the CDC, roughly 20% of our 12th graders have used prescription narcotic painkillers, sedatives, or stimulants recreationally in the past year. Disturbing news. Absolutely disturbing news, especially interrupting the neural pathways in our children. David, we're going to focus this last segment on two issues. One, synthetic hormone birth control. And two, antidepressant use in pregnant women. I'm not sure if you are aware of this, David, but it was sometime last spring, and I've mentioned this before on my show, I was sitting in front of my television with my cup of coffee, seeing what's been marketed to women this morning on the major news programs, and all of a sudden I'm jumping up and the coffee cup is flying across the air because the segment was giving women Xanax and Prozac to help them be better mommies on a national media news program. You know, we talked about how women are certainly the first ones to raise their eyebrows, do the research, and say no. However, on the flip side of that, women are the ones who are targeted for these psychotropic medications and synthetic hormones, which also are dangerous.
Yes, absolutely. I think the pharmaceutical industry is tremendously good at being able to appeal to women to get their children or their partners or whoever on treatments which they're told will help them. And the other thing is they're also good at being able to appeal to women's guilt and encourage the women themselves to take treatments on the basis that this will make them a better mother, better parent, better wife, better whatever. But in actual fact, this isn't the case. And probably the group of drugs that brings this out the best must be the antidepressants. You mentioned in the lead-in here that there's 6 million people in the States who abuse prescription drugs. But abuse in this sense means that there are people who are using these drugs in ways they oughtn't do. But in fact, there's something like 350 million prescriptions for an antidepressant in the United States each year. There's something like 35 million people in the United States who are on antidepressants in any one year. And of those, it's probably something between 20 to 30 million who are on these drugs chronically, and they're on them because they can't get off them. They're essentially what most lay people would regard as addicted to the drugs. So in that sense, it's a much bigger problem than the prescription abuse that you referred to earlier. And unfortunately, the biggest proportion of this is women and women of childbearing years, because this is the group of people that the companies have targeted the most, with the result that there's an awful lot of women of childbearing years who go along to their doctor, and if they're having what may be a relatively mild or minor episode of nerves or anxiety or possibly feeling down a bit because they've got other problems, they're encouraged to go on an antidepressant without being informed of two things. One is that there's a really high chance, particularly if you're a woman, that you can get hooked to these drugs so that when you want to come off them, for instance, to perhaps get pregnant, you won't be able to. And the other thing is that you're not told that there's a very, very high chance that these drugs double the rate of major birth defects, they double the rate of miscarriages, they increase the rate of voluntary terminations, and it now begins to look like they increase the rate of developmental delay in children who are born to women who are on the drugs throughout pregnancy. Now, developmental delay in translated into the kind of language that more people will understand is autistic spectrum disorders. These drugs seem to be closely linked to children being born with significant behavioral problems that are linked to the mother's use of the pills. But when she's put on these drugs first, she's told nothing about these risks.
And that deserves a pause for all of us to consider that. We are not told about the risks. That's why your website is so important, risk.org. That's RXISK.org. Do the doctors even know about the risks, or are they just going on what the pharmaceutical companies are telling them?
Well, the extraordinary thing is they seem to be just going on what the companies tell them. The marketing by the companies has been tremendously clever. And what doctors seem to have done is to just have lost their common sense here. But a thing you need to bear in mind is with drugs that are available on prescription only, you see, the companies, while you see adverts like the one you saw, while you see programs like the ones that you can see on TV that encourage the use of these pills, and you think that the companies are marketing to people in the street, they're not. The true consumer of a prescription-only drug is the doctor who prescribes it for you, and he consumes it by putting it into your mouth. When he consumes the pill, nothing goes wrong for him. The things that go wrong, if they go wrong for you. So he has a problem-free consumption of the pill. And this is what the companies are very good at being able to do it. Marketing to the doctor to use him to guilt trip
a woman,
to actually take the pill.
So the ads then that we're watching are to make us aware of that these drugs are available for use. Oh, and there are the side effects with all the smiling people on the ad while they're reading off the list of side effects. But to make us aware of them, or to even request them, or to be familiar with them when we go into the doctor's office and he's saying, oh, you need this drug. Oh, I remember that. I saw it on the television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they actually spend more money marketing to the doctor than they do to you. They spend roughly, on average, close to $50,000 per doctor per year, just getting the message over to him or her that they should be using medication.
Is money exchanged? Do these doctors buy these drugs and then store them?
No, it's much more a case of the marketing money goes into producing the evidence, the clinical trial evidence. But in fact, what happens here is as opposed to clinical trials that are proper, in the case of the trials that are run by the pharmaceutical industry, we don't have access to the data from these trials which show what really happened on the pill. The next thing that happens, of course, is that most of the articles about the various different pills, whether the antidepressants or drugs to lower your cholesterol levels, are birth control pills that appear in major journals, from the New England Journal of Medicine to the British Medical Journal to whatever. Most of these articles, well, in fact, almost all of these articles where they concern drugs that are on patent, are ghost-written articles. And they may appear to come from the professor of medicine in Harvard or the professor of psychiatry in Johns Hopkins University, and they may appear to come from, as I say, Harvard and Yale and Cornell and things like this, but in fact, they've usually been written by a ghostwriter in a company working to the pharmaceutical industry, and ghostwriters are tremendously skilled at being able to leave out the problems that a drug can cause and to polish up the little bits that they know are going to encourage doctors to use their pills. Now, they rarely do anything that's outright fraudulent, but in fact, they do often turn articles that are negative studies of the drug into positive studies. When the article comes out, when the company internally has concluded their drug doesn't work and has problems, the ghostwriter can turn these around and get an article says that in this trial the drug did in fact work well and was seemingly free of problems, published in some of the best journals in the field with some of the biggest names on the authorship line, when these apparent authors didn't do any of the writing of the article.
It's always a good idea to read who the sponsor of the article was, who the sponsor of the study was, to research the author, to research the department and see where their ties lie and who's funding them. Because unfortunately, it is all intertwined. And I'm so glad that you've been able to address this with us, David. The website is rxisk.org if you want a history of the pharmaceutical industry and what is going on with healthcare in America. Buy the book, Pharmageddon. And look at all of David's other books on davidhealy.org. Any closing remarks, David?
No, just to repeat, I think the key thing is for any of the women listening in here, as I say, this.org has really been created around the idea that it is the average woman out there. She doesn't have to have any background in healthcare. It's the average woman out there who is really going to get to grips with most of the problems we have and who is probably the most motivated person to make a difference. And we're hoping, we're trading on that, that it is average women out there, probably like most women listening into this program, that we all need in order to get healthcare back to where it should be.
David Healy, thank you very much. I'll be sharing your website.
Tremendous, Leslie. Thanks very much for having me on the program.
All right. Next Thursday, January 16th, my favorite endocrinologist, Dr. Margarita Okoyemaya, will be joining me, and the topic's going to be the new buzz, chronic endocrine disorders. For all of you social media fans, you can find me on Facebook under Leslie Botha and on my Facebook page at Holy Hormones Honey, on LinkedIn under Leslie Botha, and Twitter at Hormone Goddess. I invite you all to learn more about your mind, moods, and hormone cycles by reading my book, Understanding Your Mind, Mood, and Hormone Cycle, available on my blog at holyhormones.com. Thank you for listening. I'll be back again next week. Until then, share this message of hope with others. Take care and blessings.
Thanks for tuning in to Holy Hormones, Honey. Please join host Leslie Carol Botha again next Thursday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a great and healthy week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.